And welcome back to Big Talk, everyone, here on WMPG-FM. I'm your host tonight, Al Brewer, and I'm joined by...
Suzanne Murphy. Hello, everybody.
And we are fortunate tonight to have in the studio live with us a Maine filmmaker whose new documentary is coming to Portland, Maine within a week. And the fact of the matter is, this is a film about the most influential man you've never heard of, Paul Goodman. And Paul Goodman Changed My Life is the name of the film by Jonathan Lee. Jonathan, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And for those of you who instantly want to know more about Paul Goodman, you can visit the paulgoodmanfilm.com website, which is the official website of the film. And those of you who think you can answer the Jeopardy question give the answer of who is Paul Goodman, give us a call at 780-4909. But in short, Paul Goodman was a writer from the 50s and 60s who died as a relatively young man, age 60, in 1972. Might be best known for his book published in 1960, Growing Up Absurd in America. Was also a poet, a social critic, described as a public intellectual, which you could be in the 50s and 60s because there were three TV networks and only a few widely read newspapers, and you could be on them all the time and become very well known, as Paul Goodman was. Tell us a little bit, Jonathan, about what motivated you to bring Paul Goodman back to notice in the United States today.
Well, he was someone that had a huge effect on me when I was a teenager, when I was 17 in 1970. I was at a boarding school in Connecticut, and this was during the Vietnam War. There was a moment when President Nixon sent U.S. troops into Cambodia, which was widening the war beyond Vietnam, and this triggered a huge response among students. Colleges, hundreds of colleges, and many high schools went on strike to protest and to have teach-ins to draw attention to what was being done by our government. And I was one of the organizers of some teach-ins. One of the speakers that came in to talk about the war in Vietnam, when asked, could you suggest some good books we could read to understand what was happening in the country, he suggested Growing Up Absurd by Paul Goodman. I'd never heard of him before. I went and got the book. I read it. I really liked it a lot. I was very impressed with this book. And there was something about that this was a book that was very idealistic and radical, but in a very American way. Paul Goodman was kind of taking American ideals and judging our country, what was happening and being done in our country against these American ideals, and finding American society wanting. Particularly, he felt that what American society didn't have was meaningful work, which made it difficult for young people to grow up and find themselves. And that was what the book was about. It was about why young people growing up in the late 50s felt disaffected. And Goodman originally was commissioned to write a book on juvenile delinquency, and what it turned into was Growing Up Absurd, which was something much broader. So that just led me to wanting to read everything I could that he wrote, and the more I read, the more excited I was about these kind of various doors that were opening through, kind of being led by him.
And he was a prolific writer, a poet. I think he probably wanted to be remembered perhaps most of all for his poetry, or maybe he didn't care.
No, I think he thought of himself first as a poet. He was always writing poems, but he wrote across many. He refused to be bound by any boundaries by any particular academic discipline. So he and his brother Percival wrote a book in 1947 called Communitas, which was about community planning and kind of a visionary community planning. He wrote a book with a psychiatrist named Fritz Perls called Gestalt Therapy that came out in 1951 that created that school of psychotherapy. He wrote a major novel called The Empire City that was published in 1959. He wrote short stories. He wrote many essays, literary criticism. He wrote a book about Kafka. He was part of this group that was called the New York intellectuals, New York Jewish intellectuals, and they were all kind of, you know, geniuses or semi-geniuses, and he was, you know, one of the smartest of them all.
And so in the 1960s, when you were reading Paul Goodman, if you were in New York City, you'd be reading him in the New York Review of Books, you'd be reading him in the New Republic, you might be reading him in various other left-wing magazines.
Well, when he began, before he was famous, he was writing for, you know, pacifist and anarchist newspapers and magazines called Resist and Liberation and Why. But Growing Up Absurd was when it became a bestseller.
And he was born, let us say, in 1911. So he was already 50 in the 60s. And he wasn't really famous till then, is that what you're saying?
He was prolific and productive, yeah. Uh-huh. But he didn't have an audience for his writing. He had admirers, but they were more kind of coteries, small groups. But Growing Up Absurd, it just hit a nerve. I mean, it came out in 1960. It became a bestseller. Many, many young people, and these were people I interviewed who were, when I interviewed them in their, you know, 60s and 70s, read the book and said, this is an adult that understands what I'm feeling, and he's not saying something's wrong with me, that I don't want to go work in a corporation, or that I don't want to do the work my father did, or that I feel something is wrong here. That was why the book took off, was that all these young people said, this guy is putting into words what I feel, and he's not telling me there's something wrong with me.
I was a college student in the late 60s, too, and to be honest, I don't think I read the book, but the title alone was like a rallying cry almost for people, Growing Up Absurd. You just sort of, everybody sort of latched on to that catchphrase almost. It was a brilliant title, really. And the subtitle is Problems of Youth in Organized Society. So interesting how that grew out of the juvenile delinquency mission he was supposed to go on, and he realized, wait a minute, these people aren't delinquent, some of them. No. They have legitimate grievances here.
Right, because what he was writing that book in a time when juvenile delinquents or the beats or disenchanted junior executives, they were all talked about as though there was something wrong with each of them. And what can we do? The official spokespeople, the governors, and the people running American society. So what's wrong with these young people? What can we do? He quotes the governor of New York in Growing Up Absurd saying, we have to give these young delinquents a sense of belonging. And Goodman said, you know, these are people who are not serious about these young people. And one of my favorite quotes from Growing Up Absurd, he says in this kind of discussion, he says, it's difficult to grow up when your basic problems are treated as though they don't exist. And we quote him. We quote him in the book, in the movie. We use that quote. Many young people read that and said, "Yeah, the things that really upset me, people act as though they don't, you know, they don't exist." And one of the things he said, for example, in that book, he said that all of this hand-wringing about dropouts, all this public hand-wringing about dropouts. Goodman said, instead of looking at the dropouts, like what's wrong with the dropouts, the burden of proof should be turned onto the school. What are they dropping out from? The burden is on the school to change so that students will want to be there. And that was very much how he kind of turned the tables. He said, instead of looking at these different groups and saying what's wrong with them, if you look at the society, you'll see that they're all disaffected. Because they don't have opportunities to find meaningful work, to find themselves, and therefore they're unable to grow up.
You're listening to Big Talk here on WMPG-FM, and Suzanne Murphy and I are fortunate enough to be talking with Jonathan Lee, whose new film, Paul Goodman, Changed My Life, debuted at the Film Forum in New York. Received some great reviews, among them by A.O. Scott in the New York Times, who says the time is surely right for a Goodman revival, a passionate, almost prophetic sense of the impact that a writer and thinker can have on his times and the future. And this film is coming to the Portland Museum of Art November 4, 5, and 6. That's a week from this weekend. And the filmmaker Jonathan Lee will be at each screening, Friday at 6 o'clock, Saturday and Sunday at 2 p.m. In the film, Jonathan, we haven't seen the film. We've seen the trailer. It's a wonderful trailer.
I was on the website, and I don't know what I did.
Everybody should go see the trailer. But does the film open with Goodman on camera? How do you introduce him in the film?
The film opens with William F. Buckley Jr., who had a television program called Firing Line.
Introduced with music by Bach, I believe.
Yeah, and our film opens with William F. Buckley introducing Paul Goodman on his program.
And what year was that?
1966. And the topic of that 45 minutes solely given to Paul Goodman talking with William F. Buckley was, "Are public schools necessary?"
And where did Buckley come down on that?
Well, I think he didn't take it. He was just interviewing Goodman, but he was such a character himself, William F. Buckley, that people love him in the film because he's so funny to listen to and to watch. But to give him credit, he asked, you know, intelligent questions, and he's clearly was interested in Paul Goodman's ideas, and you can just see the way they talk to each other that he's. To think that today that kind of conversation wouldn't happen on television, and so I have to give him credit for that.
I said, in fact, it wouldn't happen on television. You say, would there be two intellectuals of the stature of Goodman and Buckley on TV today you can identify?
I don't think we see that anymore. I mean, part of what I feel we've been living through since those days is it's not an original idea, is this, you know, huge dumbing down of our public and political dialogue, so that, you know, it's more people throwing tomatoes at each other than respectfully discussing ideas.
A lot of anti-intellectualism at all. I mean, you're considered somehow an elitist if you have ideas and they're complicated. Then suddenly you're making other people feel dumb, and they resent that. It's really sad.
And I think it's more than I think it. I agree with you, but I also think it's hurting our country. I think it's lowering our collective intelligence.
Right.
I think it's allowing some pretty stupid people and policies to just take us all around in circles. And I'm not pointing the finger at one particular political party. One of the things about Goodman, he really took ideas seriously, and he was committed to debate. He loved to debate and to argue and to challenge. And as someone in the film says, who was a student of his at Black Mountain College in 1950, that he was, you know, that he really made you think, and that he was a very good teacher.
And I suppose seeing Goodman and Buckley open the film also demonstrates how different the media landscape is today in the United States than it was in the 50s and 60s when there was a note of seriousness.
Well, and like you said, there weren't as many media outlets, so now there's all this time that needs to be filled, so there's a lot of blather to just fill the time for all the millions of cable stations and radio stations. There weren't that many out there.
That's a good point. But TV used to begin with the farm report after the test signal.
I would just like to give out our phone number. 780-4909 is our number, 780-4909. If you would like to comment or ask a question of Jonathan Lee, who is a filmmaker who has made a documentary called Paul Goodman Changed My Life, and we're talking about the film and about Paul Goodman. If you've never heard of him, he was a public intellectual, a writer of fiction, poetry, all kinds of commentaries, and also the co-founder of Gestalt Therapy, which really is kind of mind-blowing when you think of it, too. What was his training?
His training in Gestalt Therapy was he was part of a therapy group that Laura Perls, the wife of Fritz Perls, they really developed Gestalt Therapy. And Laura ran this therapy group that she called her genius group, and it had psychiatrists and psychologists in it, and it was kind of a training group, and Paul Goodman was in that group, and that was his formal training. He practiced as a therapist for 10 years, and we cover this in the film, but my impression from various people, and his literary executor, Taylor Stair, who knows more about him than anybody else, said that this wasn't really his vocation, but he found his vocation in the course of this 10-year period when he was learning how to be useful to other people and to respond to other people who were needy and who were in some ways feeling confused about their own lives. And he went from this being a Gestalt therapist to his next step was to get this commission to write this book that became Growing Up Absurd. Yeah. And then he really kind of appointed himself as a kind of, the way I've been describing, he kind of was a self-appointed guardian of the Republic, which is, you know, one way of thinking about philosophers and social critics.
And a self-appointed guardian of the young in the Republic, primarily.
Right, because one of the things he says to William F. Buckley on that show is that it was Jefferson's belief, and then he says, Aristotle's, by the way, that the chief function of a political society is to educate its young. Goodman says this. And so he, you know, for he believes that the way young people really learn is by living in the society and absorbing its folk ways and its traditions and its customs and its beliefs and its practices, and that's where you have to pay attention to what's really happening. And he was very, very committed to the notion of democratic citizenship and of decentralized government, which was Jeffersonian. So he was very much against big centralized organizations, both corporations and government. He felt that the people involved in an activity, whether it was teachers in a school or workers in a factory, that the people involved in an activity should be the ones that had control over it. So he believed that universities should be small communities of scholars and students like they were in the Middle Ages, and he thought that the universities of today had just become these huge machines that were getting in the way of real teaching and
like
learning.
Like the 40,000 student type, you know, state university.
Right, and the pressures to publish or perish and to get tenure, all of that. But, you know, he had a collection of essays called Utopian Essays and Practical Proposals. And that was very important to kind of keep both sides of that, of those things in mind. In that book, he and his brother Percival, they had published in a small magazine called Dissent Magazine, which is still published today and which I highly recommend and am quite involved with. They published a proposal to ban private cars in Manhattan, to allow, you know, taxis and buses and ambulances, but they felt that that if private cars would be banned, this was 1961, that it would reduce pollution, congestion, that it would free up 35% of the land that was being used for parking garages, and that it could allow for, you know, low-cost, low-rise housing and parks, and the whole kind of vision of what urban life could be like if the cars were taken out of the cities. And this is just an example of the kind of thinking that he didn't feel bound to current political realities. He just said, this makes no sense, we could do it this way. And, you know, 60 years later, you know, the current mayor of New York and his, you know, very advanced bicycle riding commissioner of transportation have been trying to reclaim, you know, little islands within the city from the cars, but he had many, you know, proposals of that nature that were taken up 50 years later, and it just, I feel that we've kind of caught up with him in terms that these ideas now seem like common sense to many people, but then they didn't.
And I take it this film will help people rediscover those ideas.
Right, because we really tried to introduce, you know, his ideas about education and about cities and about decentralization and also his whole sexual life, because he was an out bisexual in the early 1940s. He never shut up about his bisexual life, and this was before there was, you know, decades before the Stonewall Rebellion. And this was one other thing about him that was very unusual, that he, not only was he bisexual, but he never hid this from anybody. So that when I interviewed his widow, Sally, they met when he was 33 and she was 23, and on their first date, I said, well, what was it like? She said, well, one of the first things he said to me was, you have to know that I'm homosexual. And I said, what do you think? She said, well, she didn't really know much about what it meant, actually. She just, what was really strange to her was that he was Jewish. And they were together for 30 years until he died, and they had two children, but
she tolerated the multiple partner thing.
She knew that was going to be part of the picture, and this also comes up in the film. She tolerated it, but he had a double standard. It was not okay with him if she had extramarital affairs. I think he was terrified of losing her. He was very dependent on her. And so I asked her, it was like one of the toughest moments in the interview. And so, you know, he and we showed this in the film, he definitely had his flaws. He was self-centered, egocentric, you know, self-indulgent. And I don't think it was easy to be married to him or to have him as a father. Because of his, I think, the bisexuality, he was always, you know, he was home and he was going out, you know, going out away from home. Mm-hmm. But he was so advanced in so many of his ideas that, I mean, he gave a great deal to a great many people who felt that, you know, that he did change their lives.
And his bisexual lifestyle was not only a radical idea, but the way he lived his life was an expression in opposition to any rigid a role at which he was primarily against in all of his writings, rigidity and a kind of militarism that infected American society, is my take on it.
Yeah, one of the people in the film, a friend of the Goodmans named Frieda Gardner, who is a poet, she says that she feels for her generation that he was there to violate boundaries, that she said he just kind of knocked all these rigid boundaries over, so that, and she says, you know, the gay man, the gay man with the family, the academic, the scholar, the political activist, and I think that's part of what was happening in the early 60s was there was a questioning of these, of what had been earlier in the 50s had been this a lot of pressure to conform. I mean, Irving Howe called it this, you know, this age of conformity was mm-hmm. the name of an essay he wrote, and Goodman was. He couldn't live that way.
In busting through these boundaries, was he bruised? Were there lots of bruises in his on his psyche or on his life or on how he thought of himself?
I think the thing he suffered from most was feeling alone, from feeling lonely, and he complained that that the theme of community was the major theme in all of his writing, but that he somehow felt destined to be left out. And some of that was provoked by his own behavior. I mean, he was always, I mean, he went to this very experimental school, Black Mountain College, and he was taught there in the summer of 1950, and he was forever trying to proselytize the male students to explore their bisexual potential, whether they were interested in it or not. And he was hoping to be asked back in September, and they didn't ask him back. And this is just an example. So, I mean, he had something to do with it.
I would just like to remind our listeners that this is Big Talk that you're listening to. My name is Suzanne, and my co-host Al and I tonight are talking with Jonathan Lee, whose documentary, Paul Goodman Changed My Life, will be shown at the museum November 4th, 5th, and 6th. And we're talking a lot about Paul Goodman, who was a fascinating and amazing intellectual who is really not very well known today. He had tremendous influence in the 50s and the 60s and into the 70s. And his most famous book, Growing Up Absurd, but a man of many talents and interests. And this movie is... sounds like it might be a way to kickstart interest in him again. Most of his books are actually out of print. Some are starting to come back by smaller presses. But, Jonathan, why do you think this is a good time in American history to bring back Paul Goodman's ideas?
I think starting off with looking at the Occupy Wall Street insurgency that's happening in New York and in Maine and in 100 other cities, people that have seen the film so far have just said it's just incredible that he seems so totally contemporary with that spirit of protest. And I've been quoting in the preface to Growing Up Absurd. He makes a comment. Again, this is coming out in 1960. He says he just believes that if 10,000 people would stand up, talk out, and insist that we can get our country back. And I said at one of the Q&As at the Film Forum,
wow,
that I feel that the Occupy Wall Street protesters they embody those words. The other comment I've made is that they are all Paul Goodman's children, whether they know it or not. His daughter Daisy, who lives in Farmington, Maine, his youngest daughter, who's now about 48, she sent me an email right before we opened in New York last week and said that she wanted to say that if her father was alive, he'd be 100 now. If he was alive, he would be at Occupy Wall Street, cheering them on and also hectoring them and lecturing them and trying to teach them something about history. And he'd be going to all of the Occupy Wall Streets, because that's what he did in the 60s. He spoke at more than 200 campuses because students were always inviting him.
And the people you interview primarily in the film are people who knew him or heard him or were taught by him.
Or read his books.
Or read his
some
books.
Some of them, yeah, all of those.
And indeed, his book, especially Growing Up Absurd, seemed to grab you, for example, strongly that just the experience of reading it, and I am going to assume reading it more than once.
Yes, I even would find myself, one of my cousins, you know, used to point this out and kind of embarrass me and say, why do you have two copies of... of the same book. I mean, does that somehow allow you to kind of get more of Paul Goodman into your system?
Which copy of the book changed your life more, do you think?
It must have been the first copy.
Okay.
Why did you have two?
No, I didn't have two of Growing Up Absurd, but I did have a couple of the other books. I'm in one called New Reformation.
But you never met Paul Goodman, is that correct?
I didn't meet Paul Goodman, and then years later... Also, I want to say, when Absurd came out, I was 7 years old, so I was like a second generation to come to him. And what I'm hoping will happen now is that there'll be a new generation that, and this is really the big test of the film, is when younger people see it, will this man's ideas seem, will he speak to young people today?
Well, I would think, I mean, he would, because not only, it's not so much protest as the sense of the grand community that's clearly what's happening with the Occupy Wall Street movement. It's all about community. I mean, in New York, they don't even want to use electronic amplification so that everybody has to repeat what the speaker is saying. It's really fascinating to me. So that everybody, and then the general assemblies, if people aren't familiar with the Occupy movement, 6 o'clock every evening, there's a general assembly of anybody, and they somehow hash out their issues. So I think that they are his children.
As so often happens on Big Talk, when you're having a great talk, time runs out, and time has run out tonight. While we've been talking with Jonathan Lee, a filmmaker, and his new film, Paul Goodman Changed My Life, is coming to Portland and will be shown at the Portland Museum of Art November 4, 5, and 6. That's next weekend. Go online and take a look at the trailer at www.paulgoodmanfilm.com, and by all means, make time to go see that film and find out about Paul Goodman, the most influential man you've never heard of. Jonathan Lee, thanks very much for joining us tonight. Suzanne Murphy, thank you.
Tune in next week for a Watch Your Language live audience show that was taped last Saturday at the Mayo Street Arts. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Good night.
Good night. Thank you.